If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch, now with Elliot Richardson, the co-founder and president of the Small Business Advisory Council. Elliot, welcome back to WGN Radio. This is John. How are you?
John, I'm great. Thanks for having me. The weather's getting warmer. So I'm optimistic about what's to come here.
Yeah, right. Get out, do some shopping in small businesses. I wanted to talk to you about that economic blackout and how it will or will not affect small businesses in Illinois. But before we do that, just talk to me about the governor's latest efforts on the behalf of small businesses. Did he say things that you liked at his address recently?
You know, one of the things we did like in his recent budget address is that there was not a mention of a new tax on small businesses. So assuming, John, that that holds true, that's good news for small businesses and local entrepreneurs that right now, you know, are struggling to sustain their operations and really want to grow and thrive. That was good news. What we'd like to hear, not just from the governor, but from policymakers in Springfield, is a plan, though, to support small businesses. And to do that in a way that sort of closes the gap between things like economic incentives that go to very large corporations to try to lure them into the state or keep them here when they threaten to leave greener pastures, and allocate some of those, I mean, really, really significant funds that are reserved, it seems, for big corporations, and allow a fair allocation to the small business community. We got to create a level playing field. We got to bridge that gap. Certainly, there is a place and tremendous value in large companies in our state, creating jobs in our state, but that can't come at the complete expense of the small business communities and the local business communities that have been here through thick and thin. And John, SBA data shows that over 97% of businesses in Illinois have under 20 employees. I mean, that's a stunning statistic. So we have to make sure that we create an environment where these local businesses and local entrepreneurs can grow, create jobs, and support their communities.
What's something you're asking for that you're not getting right now?
We would love to see the reinstatement of the Small Business Job Creation Act. These small business tax credits were wildly popular and very meaningful until they were just not renewed in 2016. And they're easy to navigate. A small business with 50 or less employees, as we define it, would get a $2,500 tax credit for creating a net new job. The data, and we're big on data, shows that it's going to be net positive in the long run, because in 2 years, even without considering all of the extra money that will flow into the economy, that tax credit will pay for itself in terms of income taxes that are paid. And most folks stay at their job for approximately 4 years. At least that's the average,
wow,
I should say.
I'm surprised asking for more than that. $2,500 tax credit for each new job created?
Yeah.
What's
hard
about that? That sounds like an easy ask.
I think it's, you said it really well, John. I think it's the easiest ask. And the fact that the program was in place, and it's not one of these programs where a small business has to like fill out tons of paperwork and a grant application. Look, we're going to spark economic development by taking that local entrepreneur in a community and helping them bring on a new employee and defraying some of those costs and sort of sharing those economic incentives. We'd like to see legislation that provides a small tax credit. We're talking about small tax credits to businesses that own their properties and operate their business out of those properties to offset rising property taxes. So we've got a long legislative agenda that we think can spark entrepreneurship, and we are now calling on legislators to make it happen this legislative session.
Sounds like this economic blackout scheduled for tomorrow on social media by various groups and individuals is targeting larger businesses that have rolled back DEI initiatives. And in fact, some of them are saying go shop small, particularly women and minority-owned businesses. Does the SBA have an opinion about all of this?
Well, You know, the way that we look at it is, and I've read conflicting information on it, John. So some of the information says, you know, it's okay to shop at small businesses. And then some of the stuff I've read on it says they're really calling for an economic boycott.
Agreed.
Unless you need to get your necessities, right?
Understood.
Understanding that people certainly are passionate about their beliefs, I strongly feel that not shopping at a small business on any given day is not a good idea. I mean, you're not hurting anybody but those small businesses and their employees and local communities and local commercial quarters. So to that extent, I have to say it's not something that I think is a very good idea. There's another part of that that says don't use your credit cards, right? Well, you know, most people don't walk around with cash. And I hate to see somebody go into the local mom and pop shop, you know, to get a cup of coffee, to buy some ice cream, and they pull out their credit card, and they're being dissuaded from using it, right? So to me, you know, folks can try to make a point, but you have to look at the unintended consequences of what you're doing, and is it really going to have the effect that you're looking to have? So if you boycott eating at a McDonald's, per se, right? That may hurt McDonald's, but you don't want that to hurt the people that work at the McDonald's. So I think it's not cut and dry. I understand saying, look, we don't want to shop at big corporations. But if that is going to hurt small businesses and that's going to hurt the economy and that's going to hurt workers, I think you got to take a real hard look whether that is the most effective way to make your point.
L.A. Richardson's the co-founder and president of the Small Business Advisory Council, smallbusinessadvisorycouncil.org. I've been saying advocacy. Is it advocacy? Yeah, I'm doing it wrong. Small Business Advocacy Council. .org. Okay, Elliot, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for your thoughts.
Hey, John, thank you for having me on. I always appreciate talking with you.
And to be clear, smallbusinessadvocacycouncil.org. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET.com, a regular on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's interesting to me, Bree, that as much as people are talking about boycotting some businesses, notably Amazon tomorrow, or Walmart and some of those shops that have rolled back some DEI initiatives. Amazon has a new initiative of its own today, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, not so much an initiative, but more of an update to Alexa.
Yeah.
And, you know, adding AI to, you know, what devices that a lot of people already have in their house. And the AI is going to make Alexa more advanced, let you do more things with it. But, you know, it also could come at a cost, too.
What do you mean by that, a cost?
Well, Alexa, and they're calling it Alexa Plus, this kind of advanced service, is going to cost you $20 a month. But if you are a Prime member, it will be free. So, you know, do you really want to pay for that or not? It's kind of up to you.
I didn't think about that. So we have Amazon Prime on our TV, and we order things from there. Not sure if we're going to do that forever now, but if we didn't and we wanted to have my smart speaker work, I would have to pay $20 a month.
Well, the usual features are still there. It's the Amazon, the Alexa Plus features, which are kind of more of the AI and more advanced things. It'll let you do things like book dinner reservations, set reminders on your calendar. It'll even order gifts for your loved ones and send them without you having to do anything.
Well, this business of task managers on apps via AI is not new. So this is their version of that, huh?
It is, and it's more, you know, you're using a speaker, so you don't really need to fire up your phone. You can just kind of be unloading the dishwasher and, you know, ask Alexa to order flowers for your spouse or something like that. You know, I think people like these kinds of tricks and things that they can do with speakers, but I don't know if I would actually pay $20 a month for something like this when I can just, you know, go onto an app or my phone and do the same kind of thing. That said, I have Amazon Prime too for mainly for, you know, that quick shipping that we've all gotten used to. And I, you know, it's one of those things that maybe I would use if I had a speaker like that.
By the way, I apologize to all of you whose speakers are going off left and right now because she's she's been saying that word. But we'll just bear with this here for just a second. Well, those virtual assistants, do they work? I've heard that the criticism is you ask it to book your airline ticket or something, and you're really trusting that this thing is going to do what you've asked it to do. Do they work, basically?
You know, I've had mixed results with this kind of stuff. I feel like I usually have to go back and just make sure that things went through the way that they're supposed to. I mean, I think about, I have an iPhone and I have Siri, and that goes off by accident all the time when I'm, running a half marathon and have my headphones in and it tries to call my boss. So, it's one of those things where I'm, running and you just, people hear me yelling stop, and that's not something you want during a race particularly.
NVIDIA's earnings were not bad, which is the new good, if you ask me, given the new challenge from DeepSeek. What's the interpretation of this?
Well, Wall Street sees good is not good enough when it comes to NVIDIA. This is kind of the honor roll student that they expect to just keep exceeding and exceeding. And, you can only go so high. There's only so much improvement you can do when you're already doing great. But they definitely took a hit from DeepSeek and all the buzz around it. DeepSeek came out and it said it was able to do these kinds of things at a much lower cost and with chips that weren't top of the line. And that made Wall Street and other people kind of question, why are we spending all this money on companies like NVIDIA when, you may not actually have to do that?
Well, who owns DeepSeek? It's a Chinese company, but is that publicly traded? Can I buy into that?
No, it's a private company. It is based in China, but there are different U.S. investment funds that have stakes in that. So it's kind of one of those private equity things where you're not quite sure what's going on behind the scenes. But that's not totally uncommon when it comes to tech companies.
Reading from your site, Energy Secretary Chris Wright says it's critical the nation be out in front when it comes to artificial intelligence, and that means having reliable and affordable sources of electricity to meet the growing demand. So what does that mean?
Well, they're looking at nuclear power. He was out west in New Mexico at, those old labs and things where we used to do nuclear research and things like that, and still do. And a lot of Western states out there do have nuclear power and nuclear reactors. We think of it as not something that we've expanded a lot in lately, but actually the U.S. is one of the biggest producers of nuclear power in the world still.
I just want to go, before I let you go, back to Amazon for just a second. As a lot of people are telling me today, they're going to cancel their Amazon memberships in protest. Other people are going to sign up. So you all have your fight the way you want. But I think more people are inclined to not participate in that company's services right now. Are you all writing about that, or do you have any information about that?
I don't really write about e-commerce myself. I deal more with security and AI and cyber and those kinds of issues. I'm sure we've got great people working on stories about that. And, that is a huge issue for people when it comes to tech and tech companies. And you just get very, very used to things like 24-hour shipping and subscriptions that just show up at your door. And I think while people like to, take a moral stand one way or the other, it's a hard thing to quit.
Yeah, somebody said something just like that to me in a text message today. They said convenience rules in America. But some folks are pushing back. We'll follow that story today, tomorrow, and Monday. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET and a half marathoner. Okay, Bree, nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
I think she might run marathons too. Most folks that do the one, do the other. Isn't that about true, Pete? My kid did a half, didn't do a full. Hey, John, focus. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, now with Tim Parody, the future of work correspondent at businessinsider.com. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This is a topic we talk about all the time on the Wintrust Business Lunch, requiring workers to be in the office full time. And you have an article about that. What are you saying about asking people, requiring them? Federal employees had to go back this week. A lot of the big companies that I just mentioned are asking everybody to go back. What are you writing about that?
Well, the thing that I'm hearing from the folks I talk to who research this kind of stuff say that the problem with asking people to go back to work full time after they've had years of maybe not doing so is that it's rankling a lot of workers who say, I can be just as productive from home. And it seems that ultimately the sweet spot really is hybrid. So we've seen a drop in engagement among workers in general in the U.S. Last year, it fell to a 10-year low. And for those people who are in the office full time, but know that they can do their job remotely at least part of the time, their engagement is the lowest. Seems to be a little frustration on their part.
What does engagement mean here?
How tied in they are to their work, how essentially interested they are in what they're doing and you know, feel a sense of passion about it, things like that. So it's that, you know, how productive they are. It's a mix of things, but it's essentially a broad look at how connected people feel to what they're doing.
Yeah. And however nebulous that may be, it would be something that an employer would want. You want a quote unquote engaged workforce, right?
Absolutely. Because you're going to get more out of people who are, it's self-evident, right? You're going to get more out of people who are interested in what they're doing and who think that there's a purpose behind what they're doing and the quality is going to be better, the productivity is going to be better. So there are reasons why a lot of employers want this. And in some cases, it seems like in an effort to boost engagement, they're bringing workers back to the office full time. And yet the research is showing that that may actually be counterproductive.
So as you said, Gallup found that worker engagement in the United States slipped to 31% in 2024, the lowest level in a decade. Does that mean 31% of people feel engaged, have that sort of personal connection to their work? Only 31% of us identify that way?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's pretty low. It's 1 in 3, of course. So, it's a real problem. And this one of the researchers I spoke to for this piece was saying, look, this has been a problem long before the pandemic, and this has been a nut that employers have been trying to crack for a long time. The consensus I got from the people that I talked to was that trying to boost engagement by requiring people to be in the office 5 days a week, again, might be actually counterproductive. A few days a week seems to be the sweet spot, but that 5 days, when you take away that flexibility that people had enjoyed, seems to really rub people the wrong way.
Mm. Somewhere there's somebody saying to the radio, hey, you don't have to be happy. You have to do the job. If you don't like it, go get a job somewhere else or start your own company. The job of your employer isn't to make your life wonderful. It's to pay you for the work you do. And so maybe this business of I'm not happy is your problem. It's not mine. Is there a mindset like that out there in the C-suites?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see that from leaders who understandably say, look, I'm paying you to do a job. So they feel they can then determine, in large part, the parameters around that. And so that's a completely understandable viewpoint. I think that, the thing that workplace researchers would say is, but if you're trying to get the most out of your people, then, being heavy-handed, if you will, about the where they do it and when they do it is not likely to achieve that end.
Something you said at the beginning of this conversation jumped out at me, and it was the word years. We treat this thing like it was a perk people got last week, and it's not there anymore, but suck it up, just go back to work. But if after 5 years you're in a lane, and that's how you've lived your life, I know it's the job, and everything I just said still is true, but I'll use the word enormity of the ask can be understated. It really is asking people, even though it's the same company and you're working from home, it really is asking a lot for them to completely change their lives, their daycare, their schedule, their commute, their expenses. It's not just come back into the office. It's change your life in many ways. And maybe that's where the disconnect is.
Absolutely. I spoke to one professor who said, if this had been a short-term thing, people would have treated it, like you said, as a blip. But because it went on for so many years, it really became something that became ingrained in how people
set up their lives. Some people moved, people had different arrangements for childcare, like you said, elder care, whatever. And so it's just, it is more of an ask to ask people to unwind that than I think that maybe some leaders might expect.
Still, I suppose some employers and managers would think, you know what, I can get along with a less engaged workforce. That is, I'll still come out ahead because they'll be in the office, we'll bump into each other, we'll exchange ideas. All of those things that are advantageous to being in the same workplace will be there. It's just you might not be as happy because you're not taking lunch at home. I wonder if that's the calculus as well. They will sacrifice engagement for what they believe will be a more productive workforce. I wonder if that math works out, you know?
That's a very good question. And it's, you know, it's possible that, that it would for some employers, but I can also see a world where, again, if you think that sort of all the positive attributes that employers are after are going to be decreased because you're telling somebody that they have to be in the office 5 days a week as opposed to, say, two or three, it just doesn't seem like the return on their investment, that is the CEO's investment, is really going to be there if you think we'll just hope they bump into each other sometimes and come up with some great new product idea or something like that. It may not work out if workers are not feeling as dialed into what they're doing.
Right. And I'm making this sound binary, Tim. Well, this is my last question for you. That is, work in the office or work from home. But in the are employers still allowing for some measure of hybrid work?
Absolutely. A lot of them are. You know, the big name companies that you alluded to, you know, just before this piece, they get a lot of attention because they're large employers and they tend to set a lot of the tone for corporate America. But there are a lot of companies, particularly smaller ones, that realize that that flexibility can be an advantage for them in terms of recruiting and retaining workers. So you really do see a lot of companies have settled into hybrid and are doing fairly well with that.
Tim Parody is the Future of Work correspondent at businessinsider.com. Nice to talk to you, Tim. Thanks for an interesting article today.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's startup incubator 1871 is giving up its office space at the Merchandise Mart. The group CEO says 1871 continues to perform, but not at a level that allows the organization to sustain its real estate footprint in the city. A letter to members says 1871 has not been immune to post-COVID challenges, so it has to adapt to an evolving landscape. 1871 launched nearly 13 years ago to bring startup founders together. It offered them an affordable space to collaborate on a short-term basis. There are currently 15 tenants, down from 52 before the pandemic. 1871 has become a mostly virtual incubator, which has allowed it to expand its reach nationwide. The popular Italian restaurant Carmine's is preparing to reopen in Chicago. Cranes reports the eatery is planning to reopen this spring after its Gold Coast home was torn down and rebuilt. Reopening will likely happen in May. Carmine's parent company is Rosebud Restaurant Group. The restaurant closed 2 years ago for the rebuild. It'll occupy the second floor of the building at 1037 North Rush, where it previously stretched across three floors of the building. It'll have a semi-open kitchen visible to diners. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And hey, happy Punchki season.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Same to you.
Yeah, Punchki season begins today, Fat Thursday, when Polish people traditionally eat Punchki. Is that the right way to say it?
Punchki is what I've always called it.
Okay, and the season continues through next Tuesday, Fat Tuesday. And any way you turn in Chicago, you'll find a bakery that is making and selling Punchki, including one of the oldest in the city, run by this guy.
John Charles Roser IV. I'm the owner of Roser's Bakery.
More from Mr. Roser after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Can you imagine how many punchki you could put in the back of one of those Silverados? A lot, but you'd have to make several trips to load up all that Roser's is making over the next few days.
We'll probably do 8,000 of them.
Roser's has been baking in Chicago since 1911, when John's great-grandfather opened in what was a mostly German neighborhood, but he says punchki has been on the menu from the beginning.
It didn't gain as much popularity until a few decades ago, probably, but yeah, we've been making them ever since we opened.
But they don't make them for very long.
Yeah, from 2 days. Tuesday.
And how many varieties?
16 different flavors we have. Technically 24 varieties, because some of those flavors you can either get them iced with the icing or you can get them powdered.
And what are the best sellers?
Custard filling, definitely the most popular, kind of a traditional, you know, some people call that the Boston cream, either iced in chocolate or powdered. strawberry. You know, we fill them with fresh strawberries, and then you either ice it with a strawberry icing or put powdered sugar on top of those as well. Prune, we have pineapple, we have lemon, we have apple, blueberry, cherry, guava, yeah, raspberry, Nutella custard, caramel custard, chocolate custard, peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter and jelly, yeah, fill it with a grape jelly and ice it with peanut butter.
Yum. And dare I ask, how's the price of eggs treating you?
Well, you know, as you can imagine, not so well. When the price doubles, if you're using 500 pounders a week, you're paying an extra $1,000 a week than what you were used to.
Roser's Bakery. It's on North Avenue, just west of Kedzie. It's been there a long, long time. On the food calendar, oh boy, there's a lot. It's National Chili Day, National Strawberry Day, National Toast Day, and National Kahlua Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
More from the Your Hometown series today as we feature Hampshire. Tag along as we discover why Hampshire is the perfect place to call your hometown. Brought to you by Illinois Lottery, doing good and supporting Illinois communities.
Our longtime hosts and friends here at WGN Radio are Steve and Johnny, and they sent a note about the mayor of Hampshire, Mike Reed. They said he was a regular member of our computer cyber squad for years. Mike Reed is a really good guy. We're very proud of him, say Steve and Johnny. And that guy, Mike Reed, says this about the village manager in Hampshire, Jay Hedges. He is a steady hand for the village and the residents. I don't know where we would be without him. All right, let's talk to that guy, Jay Hedges, the village manager in Hampshire. Hi, Jay, you're on. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing just great, thanks. How are you?
It does sound like, given your background, you really are a steal. You are a real find for this little town of 9,000 people.
Well, it's turned out to be a really great way to end my career. It'll be 5 years. I graduated from college in 76, so 50 years this year in the workforce. And this last 5 years in Hampshire has really been a pleasure to be able to put all those tools together and all the skills I developed in both the private sector and public sector. And believe it or not, this is at 65 years old, I took my first village manager's position. I had been an assistant in Hoffman Estates, Skokie, and Mount Prospect. I was actually Governor Thompson's director of commerce for a few years back in the 80s, and then in manufacturing for 30 years. So I retired in 2019 and came back to Chicago to be with my kids, and somehow ended up out here in Hampshire, and I just love it.
Yeah. Yeah, Governor Thompson tapped you as the director for economic development for the state for a while, and now you're taking those tools and maybe those contacts and probably, I would imagine, playing them out to Hampshire's advantage. That's your job, right, for economic development around there?
Yes, I would say that's the primary role in this town, at least. When I was hired 5 years ago, the board was very interested in economic development. Hampshire was just ready to boom, in my opinion, that was ready to go, and they felt like they needed somebody and some marketing for economic development. In fact, they've been working for a couple of years on a brochure to market the village. What I found out, though, was the first few weeks I was here that all they really needed was somebody to answer the phone and give them the right answers and know where the land was available for people to develop, understand our zoning code, and understand the questions developers would ask. And be prepared with those answers. And the development really happened. In fact, to this day, 5 years later, we still don't have an economic development brochure.
You guys are in the northwest part of our listening area, or at least in the Chicagoland area. We're heard everywhere, but you're up there in Kane County. So pitch me. Why would I want to put my business in your town?
You know, we call us the exurbs out here. We try and consider it a secret, really, when it comes to population, because we don't get a lot of traffic out here. In fact, in Hampshire, we're not really going after the big box stores, the big retailers. We have our own little grocery store, Blocks, which is locally owned. We have a lot of restaurants downtown. They're almost all locally owned and locally developed in the last couple of years. So our downtown is really booming. But when it comes to recruiting people out here, we're looking for the industrial and commercial developers. We have over 500 acres of manufacturing land zoned in the village near the tollway. We're right at the interchange of Route 20 and I-90. In fact, we have three truck stops at that tollway that generate a lot of revenue for the village through sales tax. And in fact, there's a site there for a fourth truck stop soon.
Yeah,
we have a hotel right there at that intersection who's done a lot of development. Actually, a gentleman who owns a trucking company bought the hotel. He wanted a nice place for his truckers to be able to stay. He's building a restaurant now because he wanted a nice place for his truckers to eat. So we have people that come to Hampshire, and they don't just build a business here, they really become part of our community. And that's what's really been great.
Proximity to Chicago is probably good, but far enough away that you can enjoy a simpler life, less traffic, that sort of thing.
Right. You know, we're 30 miles from Chicago, from O'Hare, and we're 30 miles from Rockford. So when it comes to commercial freight, you can bring in commercial freight, international, from either of those locations. So we're really a perfect location for logistics. We have a logistics facility right now that's been developed. The roads are in. There are four sites for four buildings that are shovel-ready right now. We could be in the ground in 90 days with a new project. So when it comes to industrial and logistics development, that's where I think Hampshire really has a lot going for it.
Well, 90 days is more streamlined than we do it here in Cook County, fella. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was listening to some of the stories before me, and especially about the federal government and what's going on there. I do really believe that that village government is actually, I think, the most responsive government when it comes to our residents. They come to our village board meeting. They can talk to us individually. They can pick up the phone and call the mayor, who's a very sharp young man. So I think our access to the public and our responsibility and the fact that we are so accountable to the public really makes us the most effective level of government, if you will.
Yeah. Now, I'd say that's a good pitch. Jay Hedges is the village manager, Village of Hampshire. Find out more at hampshireil.org. Jay, congrats and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John. Come out and visit us for all of our festivals this summer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next time. Later today, it's all day. Hampshire is your hometown on WGN.